Greetings. This is Tyler McFeeters with your News Gazette, dated Friday, June 27th, 2025. We'll begin with a front page story, Voice of Experience, Community Spotlight, Damon Rowell. Faith calls local man to minister to those in need. Story by Luke Taylor, out of Urbana. When Damon Rowell walks the streets, he's known as Preacher Man, or sometimes Brother Man. He says he isn't really a preacher, but his faith does call him to minister to people going through situations like those he once faced. They call me a street preacher, but I'm not a preacher. I talk to them and I let them know I was on drugs, I was on alcohol, I was homeless, I was on the streets, Rowell said. I know how you feel. I'm saying I was there. 14 years ago, after spending a large part of his life using drugs, facing homelessness, and being involved in gang activity, he said, put his life at risk, something in Rowell changed. He remembers being kicked out of a house where he was staying. He didn't have any money. It was raining and snowing. The sky was just jet dark. I couldn't breathe, and I just thought I was going to die, Rowell said. He walked for an hour in the cold. When I finally made it to my grandmother's house, I walked through the door and I was freezing. My clothes was frozen like the Tin Man in The Wizard of Oz, he said. I came in and fell to the ground, boom, and you could hear the ice coming off of me. As he laid on his grandma's couch that night, fighting to breathe and warm up enough to sleep, Rowell felt as if God was speaking to him. That very night, he woke his grandma up and told her that he needed help. Rowell entered the Safe House, a rehabilitation program sponsored by Canaan Baptist Church, where he was able to begin his journey of sobriety. Since then, he's been dedicated to helping the homeless community of Champaign-Urbana and beyond. His efforts will be recognized this Saturday at the MLK Jetty Rhodes Day celebration, as he is honored with this year's Community Unit Award. In the years since he left rehab, Rowell has lost two of his sons, one to gun violence and one to drug use. He said experiencing those tragedies was incredibly difficult, making him question why this would happen after he worked so hard to get sober and be around for his family. Rather than falling into depression, he's trying to use what he has gone through to be even stronger in his convictions. That's why I'm out here in these streets and talking to these people that's on drugs. That's messed up, Rowell said. We hear where don't nobody want to come and say, how you doing? We hear where don't nobody want to touch you. We hear where don't nobody want to hug you. We hear when nobody wants to get close to you. Rowell volunteers at Strides Shelter and the Safe House with the mentoring program and with his own organization, New Beginnings Outreach Events, which has hosted job fairs and wellness fairs to help people find work and get health care they usually couldn't afford. What he's really known for, though, is connecting with people living in the streets as people. I wasn't scared when I was in the streets, so I'm not going to be scared now. That's the problem. Some people are scared to come out here in the community and help, Rowell said. While he can understand why people are wary of talking to unhoused people they don't know, Rowell said that's not how he sees it. His mission is just to talk with people, to provide food and clothes when he can, but mainly to build trust and be able to encourage people to pursue rehab or other programs that can help them out of tough situations. It takes patience, Rowell said, but mainly it takes treating people like people and being honest with them. If you was looking down from heaven at somebody, how would you feel if they walked past your child? Somebody that can help your child, but because they're in a certain way, they walk past them, Rowell said. The next story on the front page is Tolono Fun Days moved into the back seat. Longtime parade drivers 2025's Grand Marshals. A story by Dave Hinton, out of Tolono. For the first time since the late 70s, Dale and Virginia Steerwalt get to sit in their back seat as they tour the Tolono Fun Days parade route in their 1970 red Chevy Impala convertible. Fun Days starts this evening and runs through Saturday. Longtime chauffeurs of Fun Day's Grand Marshals, the steer waltz will be the ones giving the royal wave this time around. The steer waltz have been married for 63 years. The Fun Day's parade has been an annual ritual for them. It will be again in 2025, but the view will be a little different. Their two children, Peggy and Douglas, will be in the front seat this time. The parade kicks off at 11 a.m. at Eastside Park, ending in Westside Park. "We finally gave in," the affable Dale Steerwalt said. "They've been after us for 25 years to be Grand Marshals." Dale is a Chevy fan, and his first convertible was a 1959 Impala that he began driving in the parade, but had to take a break ferrying Grand Marshals for about a decade after he traded it in 1966. In 1977, he was alerted to a 1970 model being for sale. "My brother said, there's a real good-looking Impala convertible on a lot in Gibson City," he said. It was a second-owner vehicle with a price tag of $2,400. Dale snapped it up. "I feel honored that they asked me to do it," Dale said. "There was a period of time when convertibles were hard to come by. It's just a tradition that they keep asking me to drive the Grand Marshals." And it was a tradition that after a few decades, the Fun Day's organizers asked the Steerwalts to be Grand Masters, Grand Marshals, and they turned them down, until this year. One of Steerwalt's granddaughters, Gina, came by and drove the car to give it a good cleaning. The 70 Impala is largely kept in the garage. The top hasn't been up for the past 15 years. The Steerwalts do take it out for a spin once in a while, sometimes to get ice cream, sometimes just for a ride. At times, son Douglas joins them when he gets his 64 Chevy Supersport convertible out, and they all go out for ice cream. A native of West Virginia, Virginia Steerwalt, who is 86, came to this area when her father joined the University of Illinois to work in the agronomy department. She taught third grade at Gardenville School, Champaign, for 6 years. Dale is a native of the Sadorus area. Dale, 90, is a retired farmer and was pretty good at it, having been named News Gazette Farm Leader of the Year in 2011. The Steerwalts were married in 1961. They also drive their car in the Unity Homecoming Parade and in the Champaign 4th of July Parade for the active senior Republicans. The Steerwalts are members of Tolono United Methodist Church. Dale served as township supervisor for 50 years, served a short stint on the Champaign County Board, and was on the Champaign County Farm Bureau Board. Diane Ducey, Fun Day's publicity chair, said the event's committee of volunteers were trying to think of people who really contribute to our community, and said the Steerwalts certainly fill the bill. Farmers working hard, helping others, raising a great family, honest churchgoers, great representatives of the good people of Tolono. The next front page story is Project Success of Vermilion County. Danville murder impacts music video project participants. Shooting victim's cousin took part in writing song lyrics. Story by Jennifer Bailey. Out of Danville. Danville High School students David Moore and Simone Modest hope the music video they've been working on this week through the Project Success summer program will make the community take even more notice of gun violence, because it has to end. Modest and her family were directly impacted by gun violence this past weekend when cousin Anaya Davis, 18, died in a shooting during a pop-up party at Winter Park. Modest, 15, said she's been singing for the music video this week and came up with some of the lyrics, which hold extra meaning with the loss of her cousin. "I wrote the first part, but I couldn't get the second verse," she said, adding that she received some help, and then we just started singing. She said she's proud of the song. "It's saying, let's rise up, make a change," she said. "We are trying to help the kids know that we don't always have to choose violence. I mean, there's other stuff we can do." Moore, 14, has been rapping this week for the video. "My lyrics were at first not good," Moore said, about also getting some assistance. "It was the first time he rapped. He practiced and recorded his part. On Thursday, they were filming the last two scenes of the music video. Some of the scenes were in a classroom, while others were filmed outside. We're excited about seeing the end result, and they hope the community takes the song and video to heart. Modest hopes people actually listen to the lyrics and don't just listen to it as a song. And stop violence, Moore said. Yeah, that's the main thing, Modest said about what they hope people get out of the song and video. Modest said of her cousin, she didn't really get to finish living her life. The teens were among about 30 Project Success students from Northridge Middle School and Danville High School who participated in Say It With Music Camp this week with Her Records Incorporated out of Atlanta. They were finishing the approximately 5-minute video with the producers and instructors, including Randy Gravett. He was filming final scenes Thursday. A town hall-like setting of the group of students and adults inside St. James United Methodist Church, Danville. Say It With Music is a music production program designed to ignite creativity, build confidence, and introduce students to exciting STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, careers in the music industry. Music producers and filmmakers bring the recording studio and help students on songwriting, rap lyrics, recording, and filming a professional music video. The final music video will be on YouTube through Say It With Music. Project Success of Vermilion County Chief Executive Officer Kimberly David said they learned about the Say It With Music program when their violence prevention coordinator saw it at a vendor fair at a spring conference in Nashville, Tennessee. The program then sent a couple representatives here this week to focus on STEM and violence prevention, with the students producing the music video. The students chose to focus on gun violence. These students are amazingly talented in sharing their message about gun violence, David said of the student-written lyrics. A lot of our students and their families are affected by violence, and I think just giving them an outlet to be able to share their feelings and what they're thinking, David said. In addition, Project Success is working on a youth council to get the students' input on what they want or what they think can be done to try to prevent gun violence. Gravett said the first day of this week's camp, they wrote everything for the song. The second day, they recorded it. Then they were shooting the video in 2 days. They impressed me, Gravett said. Everybody is on the song except a couple who just helped with the video side. They had 3 girls sing, a couple did poems, and the guys rapped. It's making a community event, honestly, making everybody involved, he said. Gravett said that from the first day when they walked in, the students have been amazing. He said they don't get that every time they work with student groups. Others may be tired with early or afternoon classes. The Danville students were welcoming and ready for video making from the start. David said once the video is ready, they'll be sharing it with the community. Moving now into the national and world news section. U.S. Congress. Tax break bill suffers setback. Key Medicaid provision is found to violate Senate procedural rules, forcing Republicans to consider options. Story out of Washington and the AP. The Senate parliamentarian has advised that a Medicaid provider tax overhaul central to President Donald Trump's tax cut and spending bill does not adhere to the chamber's procedural rules, delivering a crucial blow as Republicans rush to finish the package this week. Guidance from the parliamentarian is rarely ignored, and Republican leaders are now forced to consider difficult options. Republicans were counting on big cuts to Medicaid and other programs to offset trillions of dollars in Trump tax breaks, their top priority. Additionally, the parliamentarian, who is the Senate's chief arbiter of its often complicated rules, advised against various GOP provisions barring certain immigrants from health care programs. Republicans scrambled Thursday to respond, with some calling for challenging or even firing the nonpartisan parliamentarian, who has been on the job since 2012. GOP leaders dismissed those views and instead worked to revise the various proposals. We have contingency plans, said Majority Leader John Thune of South Dakota. Friday's expected votes appeared to be slipping, but Thune insisted that we're plowing forward. But Democrats, who are unified against the package as a tax giveaway for the wealthy at the expense of American safety net programs, said the procedural decisions would devastate the GOP package. Senator Ron Wyden, the top Democrat of the Senate Finance Committee, said the Republican proposals would have meant $250 billion less for the health care program, massive Medicaid cuts that hurt kids, seniors, Americans with disabilities, and working families. Trump wants action. The outcome is a setback as Senate Republicans race toward a weekend session to pass the bill and send it back to the House for another vote before Trump's 4th of July deadline. Trump hosted House Speaker Mike Johnson and other GOP lawmakers in the East Room at the White House, joined by truck drivers, firefighters, tipped workers, ranchers, and others that the administration says will benefit from the bill. We don't want to have grandstanders, Trump said of the GOP holdouts. Trump said there are hundreds of things in the emerging package of tax breaks, spending cuts, and bolstered money to carry out his mass deportation plans. It's so good. What's at stake? At its core, the big bill, which has passed the House and is now being revised in the Senate, includes $3.8 trillion in tax breaks that had been approved during Trump's first term but will expire in December, imposing a tax hike if Congress fails to act. To help offset lost revenues, Republicans are relying on steep cuts to health care and food stamps and imposing new fees on immigrants. GOP leaders were already struggling to rally support for Medicaid changes that some senators said went too far and would have left millions without coverage. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office has said more than 10.9 million more people would not have health care under the House-passed bill. Senate Republicans were proposing deeper cuts. After the parliamentarian advised against the Medicaid provider tax change, Republicans said they would try to revise the provision to make it acceptable, perhaps by extending the start date of any changes. They are rushing to come up with similar adjustments to other proposals that have run into violations, including one to change the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, also known as food stamps. It's all delaying action on the bill, but Republican leaders have little choice. They are counting on the health care restrictions to save billions of dollars and offset the cost of trillions of dollars in tax cuts. Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, the Budget Committee chairman, rejected calls to fire the parliamentarian and said in a statement he was working with the office to find a pathway forward. Medicaid cuts. States impose the so-called provider tax on hospitals and other entities as a way to help fund Medicaid, largely by boosting the reimbursements they receive from the federal government. Critics say the system is a type of laundering, but almost every state except Alaska uses it to help provide health care coverage. The House-passed bill would freeze the tax, while the Senate would cut the tax that some states are allowed to impose. Several GOP senators have opposed cutting the Medicaid provider tax, saying it would hurt rural hospitals that depend on the money. Hospital organizations have warned that it could lead to closures. Senator Josh Hawley, Republican of Missouri, among those defending the change, said he had spoken to Trump late Wednesday and the president told him to revert to the earlier proposal from the House. "I think it just confirms that we weren't ready for a vote yet," said Senator Tom Tillis, Republican of North Carolina, who also raised concerns about the provider tax cuts. More than 800 million people in the United States use Medicaid, alongside the Obama-era Affordable Care Act. Republicans want to scale Medicaid back to what they say is its original mission, providing care mainly to women and children, rather than a much larger group of people. To help defray lost revenues to the hospitals, one plan Republicans had been considering would have created a rural hospital fund with $15 billion as backup. Some GOP senators said that was too much, Others, including Senator Susan Collins of Maine, wanted at least $100 billion. Tough choices ahead. The parliamentarian has worked around the clock to assess the legislation and ensure it complies with the so-called Byrd Rule, named for the late Senator Robert C. Byrd of West Virginia, which bars policy matters in budget reconciliation bills. If leaders moved ahead without altering the provisions, the measures could be challenged, requiring a 60-vote threshold to overcome objections. That would be a tall order in the Senate, divided 53-47, and with Democrats unified against Trump's bill. It's pretty frustrating, said Senator Rick Scott, Republican of Florida, who wants even steeper reductions. Overnight Wednesday, the parliamentarian advised against GOP student loan repayment plans, and on Thursday, the parliamentarian cited those that would have blocked access to Medicaid and other health care programs from immigrants who are not student citizens. Earlier, plans to gut the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau were also found to violate the rules. Next story in the National and World News section is U.S. Supreme Court ruling. States may bar Medicaid users from Planned Parenthood clinics. Story by David G. Savage of the Los Angeles Times, TNS. Out of Washington, the Supreme Court ruled Thursday that states may exclude Planned Parenthood clinics from providing medical screenings and other health care for women on Medicaid. The court's conservative majority cast aside the long-standing rule that said Medicaid patients may obtain medical care from any qualified provider. In a 6-3 vote, the justices ruled the Medicaid Act does not give patients an individual right to the provider of their choice. The dispute turned on abortion, even though federal funds could not be used to perform abortions. Medicaid is funded by the federal government and the states. For decades, conservative states have sought to defund Planned Parenthood and argue they did not want to subsidize a leading provider of abortions. But until recently, the federal government and most courts had held that Medicaid patients may go to any qualified provider for health care. The legal battle turned on whether the Medicaid Act gave patients a right that could be protected in court. The answer was no, said Justice Neil M. Gorsuch, speaking for the majority. The court's three liberals, all women, dissented. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson said the decision will deprive Medicaid recipients in South Carolina of their only meaningful way of enforcing a right that Congress has expressly granted to them, and more concretely, it will strip those South Carolinians and countless other Medicaid recipients around the country of a deeply personal freedom, the ability to decide who treats us at our most vulnerable. Justices Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan agreed. In theory, a Medicaid patient could file a complaint with the Trump administration and tell the Department of Health and Human Services that the state is failing to comply fully with the Medicaid Act. Planned Parenthood clinics provide cancer screenings, birth control medical screenings, pregnancy testing, contraception, and other health care services. Congress pays most of the state's costs for Medicaid, and the law says any individual eligible for medical assistance may receive care from any provider who is qualified to perform the service. Last year, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals rejected South Carolina's contention that it could exclude Planned Parenthood from the Medicaid program. We reaffirm that a Medicaid beneficiary may vindicate her right under the Medicaid Act to freely choose among qualified health care providers, of which Planned Parenthood is one, wrote Judge J. Harvey Wilkinson, a prominent conservative and a Reagan appointee. But the court agreed to hear the state's appeal in Medina v. Planned Parenthood. And the final story on the National and World News is Mideast Conflict. Iranian leader reemerges, denigrates attacks' impact. White House says Khamenei just attempting to save face. Story out of Dubai, the United Arab Emirates, and the AP. Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei said Thursday that his country had delivered a slap to America's face by striking a U.S. airbase in Qatar Qatar, and warned against further attacks in his first public comments since a ceasefire agreement with Israel. Khamenei's pre-recorded speech that appeared in Iranian state television, his first appearance since June 19th, was filled with warnings and threats directed towards the United States and Israel, the Islamic Republic's longtime adversaries. The 86-year-old, a skilled orator known for his forceful addresses to the country's more than 90 million people, appeared more tired than he had just a week ago, speaking in a hoarse voice and occasionally stumbling over his words. The Supreme Leader downplayed U.S. strikes on three Iranian nuclear sites Sunday using bunker buster bombs and cruise missiles, saying that U.S. President Donald Trump, who said the attack completely and fully obliterated Iran's nuclear program, had exaggerated its impact. "They could not achieve anything significant," Khamenei said. Missing from his more than 10-minute video message was any mention of Iran's nuclear program and the status of its facilities and centrifuges after extensive U.S. and Israeli strikes. His characterization of Monday's strike on the U.S. airbase in Qatar contrasted with U.S. accounts of it as a limited attack with no casualties. The White House responded to Khamenei's video, accusing him of trying to save face. "Any common-sense, open-minded person knows the truth about the precision strikes on Saturday night," Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt told reporters Thursday. "They were wildly successful." UN nuclear watchdog confirms damage to sites. The head of the UN nuclear watchdog, International Atomic Energy Agency Director Rafael Grossi, reiterated Thursday that the damage done by Israeli and U.S. strikes at Iranian nuclear facilities is very, very, very considerable, and that he can only assume the centrifuges are not operational. "I think annihilated is too much, but it suffered enormous damage," Grossi told French broadcaster RFI. The IAEA has not been allowed to visit any of the Iranian facilities to do an independent assessment of the damage. Iran's former foreign ministry spokesperson, Ismail Baghi, also conceded Wednesday that "our nuclear installations have been badly damaged, that's for sure." Khamenei had not been seen in public since taking shelter in a secret location after the outbreak of the war June 13th, when Israel attacked Iranian nuclear facilities and targeted top military commanders and scientists. After Sunday's attack on Iran's nuclear facilities, Trump was able to help negotiate a ceasefire that came into effect Tuesday. Iranian leader warns U.S. against future further attacks. Khamenei claimed the U.S. had only intervened in the war because it felt it, if it did not intervene, the Zionist regime would be utterly destroyed. "It entered the war to save them, yet it gained nothing," he said. He said his country's attack Monday on the U.S. base in Qatar was significant since it shows Iran has access to important U.S. centers in the region and can act against them whenever it deems necessary. "The Islamic Republic was victorious and in retaliation delivered a hand slap to America's face," he said, adding, "this action can be repeated in the future. Should any aggression occur, the enemy will definitely pay a heavy price," he said. Trump has dismissed the retaliatory attack as a very weak response, saying that the U.S. had been warned by Iran in advance and emphasized that there had been no casualties. With ceasefire in effect, life slowly returns to normal. On Thursday, Iran partially reopened its airspace, which had been closed since the war began, and shops in the capital, Tehran, began to reopen, with traffic returning to the streets. Majid Akhavan, spokesperson for the Ministry of Roads and Urban Development, said Iran had reopened its airspace for the eastern half of the country to domestic and international flights, including those transiting Iranian airspace. Earlier this week, Tehran said 606 people had been killed in the conflict in Iran, with 5,332 people wounded. The Washington-based human rights activists group released figures Wednesday suggesting Israeli strikes on Iran had killed at least 1,054 and wounded 4,476. The group, which has provided detailed casualty figures from multiple rounds of unrest in Iran, said 417 of those killed were civilians and 318 were security forces. At least 28 people were killed in Israel and more than 1,000 wounded, according to officials there. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of our News Gazette, dated Friday, June 27th, 2025. Please stay tuned.